Welcome to Drive Time GP, a podcast exclusively for healthcare professionals. Understanding and managing tension type headaches. A practical approach for GPs.
Headaches are common, and tension type headache is the most common headache in the general population. Now, given the prevalence of headaches in the population and the frequency with which we GPs see patients with headaches, of course, it's important that we have got a really good understanding of the different headache types and their management. Simple analgesic agents like paracetamol, aspirin, and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs can be given as initial therapy for tension type headache, but care needs to be taken when we're using these medications because of the risk of medication overuse headache. It's all pretty complicated. So what else can patients try when their symptoms persist? We're going to sort this out today. And with me in the studio in Sydney is our fellow GP, Dr. Eugene Koo, and in the Gold Coast, physiotherapist Ian Harris and pharmacist Joyce McSwan. And we're going to talk all about the diagnosis and management of tension type headache. Guys, welcome to Drive Time GP.
Thanks
so much.
Thank you.
Eugene, let's start with you. Tension type headaches, they're really common. Can you tell us about exactly how prevalent they are and the impacts that they have on the lives of our patients?
Well, tension type headaches are extremely common, as you've said, and they can impact our patients severely, depending on the type of headaches they have. For those who are lucky enough to get it infrequently, they get it less than one day per month, and that's about 63.5% of tension type headache patients. Those who get it frequently, which is 1 to 14 days per month, this accounts for 21.6% of tension type headache patients. That's significant because up to 14 days, that's half the month. And those who get it chronically, they can get it for 15 more days a month, as we can both agree these people are suffering, but that's about 1% of the tension type headache patients. Nonetheless, we found that with these sort of headaches, on average, there can be up to 9 lost work days and 5 reduced effective days per year. And this is just counting the economic loss for not turning up to work. We haven't counted for the personal impact on patients' lives, the disability it causes to them, the impact on relationships, family and friends. A recent Danish study told us that the number of work days lost due to tension-type headaches was 820 compared to 270 per 1,000 individuals for migraines per year, telling us that there's a greater burden of tension-type headaches that takes its toll on the population. Very common, people are suffering.
Yeah, that's just incredible. Ian, let's turn to you. How does tension-type headaches usually present? And can you tell us a little bit about how we diagnose it? Because it can be really tough, right?
Absolutely. It's very, very tough to diagnose. Tension-type headaches usually present as a constant, dull, pressing, band-like pain, and it's typically bilateral. The pain is mild to moderate in intensity and lacks the pulsating, throbbing quality of particularly migraines. Tension-type headaches are generally non-disabling, meaning patients can often continue with their daily activities despite their headaches, so activity doesn't really particularly affect it. Many patients also report associated muscle tenderness, and this is often in the jaw, the scalp, the neck, and the shoulder regions, which contributes to the discomfort as well. One of the things we find really important because of the lack of specific diagnostic tests is taking a very thorough history to elicit the type of headache that we might be dealing with. The history, how long has the patient experienced these headaches, the frequency and duration, the nature of the pain, whether it's dull, pressing, or band-like, with any visual symptoms, that's very, very important, such as blurriness. With the presence of nausea and vomiting, which is typically absent in a tension headache. Sensitivity to light or sound, which can be occasionally be present. But in a tension headache, it's very, very mild, and it's definitely not the primary feature. It's unlikely to have more than one of these symptoms, and they'd be very mild. Known or suspected triggers such as stress, prolonged poor posture or muscle tension is often there for tension headaches, which is a little bit different in migraines particularly. It's also crucial to rule out any identifying red flags such as sudden onset of severe headache, often a thunderclap headache, new headache in patients over 50, headache with neurological symptoms such as weakness, visual changes or confusions, and worsening headache with a cough or straining, and headaches accompanied by fever or systemic illness. So you can see how the history taken is of utmost importance in a tension type headache to rule out others, as well as to confirm a diagnosis of a tension headache.
So there are a lot of crossovers when it comes to migraine and tension type headaches. Have you got some good tips for us GPs on how to actually distinguish between them? And is that an important thing to do? Like, do we need to actually tell the difference between them?
Absolutely. It's vital to be able to tell the difference because it will guide our treatment of the particular headache. Bear in mind, there can be slightly mixed headaches, but there are definitely some tips to highlight in that it might be more likely to be a tension type headache. Migraines typically involve the autonomic nervous system. So the photophobia, phonophobia, and osmophobia are very, very common. Important migraines usually don't last much longer than 3 days, and tension headaches can persist for much longer. A milder, described as constant band-like pressure that is usually bilateral. It does not worsen with physical activity. And the triggers generally are more related to food and hormone changes, sensory stimuli in migraines, whereas in tension headaches, they're more commonly triggered by stress, muscle tension, and prolonged poor postures, as seen with desk and computer work, prolonged positions. These differences can help us with diagnosis and both the management. So it's very, very important.
Eugene, let's come back to you. Have you got advice for your fellow GPs about managing tension type headaches?
Yeah, it's very important we give our patients clear and simple instructions. And firstly, they should be encouraged to self-manage their tension type headaches. This would mean self-monitoring of symptoms, identifying triggers such as posture, prolonged desk use, and also adapting their lifestyles to avoid making their symptoms worse. It's very important that they maintain good sleep hygiene, you know, stop the phones by 6 p.m., no blue light, and, you know, get to sleep, exercise regularly. This would keep the muscles happy. Maintain good hydration, eating regularly. Relaxation and stress management techniques are very important just to let the muscles around the head, neck, and shoulders and back relax as well. It even helps if they do mindfulness meditation or diaphragmatic breathing. And of course, they should avoid situations that can lead to musculoskeletal pain in the neck, shoulders, and even around the back that can trigger these headaches. So good computer workstation ergonomics, very important. They should take regular breaks from computer screens. Every 30 minutes of sitting, you should just get up and stretch for a minute. Keep a close eye on caffeine because that can be a trigger. When in doubt, they should also see a physio. And physiotherapists are very helpful with musculoskeletal troubleshooting and providing treatment for tension-type headaches.
Fantastic advice. I take absolutely none of it in my daily life, I have to tell you. Joyce, let's bring you in here. What about when we do all of the things that Eugene's just suggested and the symptoms just keep going on? Often our patients do want a pharmacological solution. What do you suggest?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there is a place for non-pharmacological treatment, but sometimes the intensity really requires some pharmacological help. So typically I would suggest, given the pathology, that there is focus on using pharmacological treatments that relax the musculature. Now, typically we know we use paracetamol, aspirin, non-steroidals as the initial therapy for tension type headache. And that's certainly reasonable. However, there is a chance of overuse with these pharmacological agents. However, the problem is that if we use it for more days of the month, 15 or more, we really start to get into trouble. So we really need to limit treatment days to only about 9 days per month if possible. But when you hear some of the things that my colleagues are talking about in terms of frequency, sometimes it's not that possible. The other thing to really avoid and to be aware of with pharmacological treatments are opioids, benzodiazepines, and any of the ones that deal with cognitive dampening, as it were, really should be avoided. I know they're easy to kind of gravitate to because traditionally we think them as strong pain relievers, but they really will worsen the headache in the longer term.
Can we talk about orphenadrine, which is a muscle relaxant? It does have a role for tension type headaches, but a lot of GPs don't necessarily turn to it as our first line. How does it work and what's its place in managing tension type headaches?
Absolutely. It's a molecule that we forget. And typically when you treat anything, you want to treat some kind of causation in terms of being aligned with the pathology. So again, we heard from our colleagues here that there's certainly musculature involved. And while we deal with inflammation, which is secondary to the muscle tension, we should treat the muscle tension with something that's a relaxant. And with this molecule, what it does is it actually relaxes the skeletal muscles. And how it does that is that it blocks the muscarinic acetylcholine receptors, and it actually does help with some of that nerve impulsing into spinal cord, relaxes the muscles. And it also has, interestingly, an antagonistic effect on histaminergic receptors. Now, with the histaminergic receptors and even crossing over to some of the serotonergic receptors, it actually has some contribution around, actually helps to relax the spasm, the muscle spasm. And that's why I think Ian was talking about the band, you know, that tight band. So in Australia, in orphenadrine, we've got products like Norflex, which is 100 milligrams orphenadrine. And then we've got Norgesic, which is in combination. It's a lower dose and it's combined with paracetamol, 450 milligrams. So it's a very versatile formulation.
Let's talk about adverse effects of orphenadrine.
In terms of side effects, you can get drowsiness, you can get dry mouth, and also some of the anticholinergic effects there as well. Some patients do develop tachycardia or palpitations, urinary hesitancy, like that of anticholinergic agents. You know, we've got to be careful with those with glaucoma as well. And so some patients, you know, do get blurred visions or dilation of pupils, even increase in ocular tension. So contraindicated in those with glaucoma, of course. Your stock standard sort of vomiting, dizziness, even headaches, you've got to be cautious with that. So typically I tell my patients, look, start with a low dose. A formulation like Norgesic in combination with paracetamol already in there is quite synergistic. And I tell my patients, look, start with a low dose. Let's see how you go. If you're concerned, have it at night and then monitor. And if my patients can adopt and adapt well, then I will not hesitate to help them to increase the dose judiciously.
It's been a really great talk about tension type headaches, something that every GP would see at least once a week. What I'm hoping is that we can get each of you to give your key take-home messages that you want GPs to hear from listening to Drive Time today. Eugene, let's start with you.
Well, for GPs, it's very important they listen to their patients, and considering that opioids and benzos can turn up positive on pre-employment medicals and drug tests, orphenadrine can be a viable option. But we have to be careful because for some people, they experience sedation when on orphenadrine, so that's something we must take into account. Otherwise, it's definitely worth a shot.
Sounds like a great tip. Ian, what's your top tip for GPs?
Get the diagnosis right, really listen to the patient from the diagnostic criteria, differentiate between particular common ones, the migraines and the tension headaches. Once you've got that right, get the treatment right, get appropriate activity, get change of positions, manage stress, and find enjoyment in particularly work and life balance, I think is really, really important with these tension headaches.
I love that advice. Joyce, your final words.
I think it's very important during a plan that the patient knows when to take the orphenadrine and paracetamol. So as a GP, giving them some quick guidance around that, take it early, take it when you feel that muscle tensioning. Patients can be a little bit tentative given the anxieties with taking medicines that are new. Some will save it to the last intense pain option, and that's not really going to work then very well. But all of that is really proactive.
Great tips. I love that. Dr. Eugene Koo, Ian Harris and Joyce McSwan, thank you so much for joining us on Drive Time GP.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Please note the PBS information for Norgesic, orphenadrine and paracetamol is not listed on the PBS. Before prescribing, please review the full product information. The substantiating references and product information can be obtained from the Drive Time Radio website. This interview was supported by iNova Pharmaceuticals and produced in March 2025. The views expressed are those of the individual speakers and may not represent those of the supporting organisation or Drive Time Radio Australia Proprietary Limited.